What am I supposed to tell you? I'm enjoying leaning up against a cum-soaked wall with people jacking off in an alley?
Hello, I am Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. The golden age of cruising. Now, as far as I know, no one has quite pinpointed the exact years of this magical, magical era, but the 70s were definitely, definitely part of it. It was post-Stonewall, so there was a new kind of hope and enthusiasm and confidence within the community. And crucially, it was also pre-AIDS and HIV, which meant that there was less shame attached to sex. It was at the tail end of the 70s that this week's guest, the award-winning filmmaker Glenn Gaylord, first moved to LA. At this point, he was too young to go to the clubs, but he was also too horny to stay at home, and so he found himself gravitating towards the gay bookshop, Drake's. Now, there was tons of cruising that was happening inside Drake's at the back of the store, but there was also a lot that happened on the streets in the neighborhood surrounding the shop. Like, a lot. Like, you're going to find it hard to believe how much was actually happening. But don't take my word for it. Why don't we see what Glenn has to say?
I was tired of scooting around West Hollywood, and I was too afraid to go into the bars because now I'm in college and I'm like, what if I run into one of my classmates? I was scared of that.
Isn't that funny? Like, if they saw you and they're in a gay bar, then there's a reason why they're in the gay bar. So why would you be afraid of them seeing you?
Oh, I didn't think it through. You're applying logic to a 17-year-old brain.
I'm sorry, of course.
So I decided to venture out, and I had read pre-internet. There were these publications like the Damron Guides, which is Ramrod spelled backwards. And they would just tell you where all the gay places were, bars, cruising areas, restaurants, all over the country. And it told me about this bookstore on Melrose Avenue called Drake's, which is no longer there. But it was one of those porno shops that sold videos, gay porn and lube and poppers and accoutrements. And sex toys of all shapes and sizes. And they had these video booths in the back where you put quarters in and you watched 5 minutes of the porn and you keep putting more quarters in and people would jack off or have sex in those booths. And so I thought, oh, well, I'm going to check that out because I'm too afraid to go to the bars. And I get there.
Too afraid to go to the bars. So I'm going to go somewhere where I'm going to have sex with someone in public.
No, I wasn't going into the store.
Oh, okay.
So let me give you the picture of this. So off Melrose, which is like this bunch of shops, are all these suburban streets where most of the houses are like mid-century modern single-story bungalows, tree-lined, very cozy. So there's Melrose, then a street called Sierra Bonita, and then another street called Curson, and I forget the street down below, maybe Clinton. And people would circle the block all night long, cruising. Most people wouldn't go into the bookstore, but they knew, oh, well, there's a store nearby, so there must be action. And there was, all night long, cars in both directions circling and circling. So I thought this was like perfect opportunity to get laid without having to go into a bar.
Wow. And so was this information readily available in the
The Damron Guide. I mean, we talk about cruising spots. So the Damron Guide listed all the different gay bookstores and sex shops. And so that was on there. And it talked about this cruising.
Surrounding it.
So I checked it out. I parked my moped and I was too scared to go into the store, but I'd walk around the block and it was insane. Everybody driving around would check you out. You'd get eyes on you from the cars. And then if you looked really carefully, you'd see men having sex in people's yards, in the alleyways, just everywhere, right? So I would start to meet guys this way. I would you know, get picked up, go to their place, have sex, which was crazy. That was, you know, I just let a total stranger take me in their car and not kill me. Like, how does this happen in LA? But it was just, you know, me being young and dumb and, you know, wanted to have an adventure. And so I would start to nickname guys. You know, there's the guy in the alley who was a hot mess, so I called him Alley Oops. There was a guy that was really into, he was dressed like a cowboy, and he was really into using his fist for sex, and so I called him Fistful of Dollars.
Wait, really? I need some clarification.
Yes, yes.
He was really into using his fist for sex. You mean he was into fisting?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
That was just my, that was my adventurous way of saying it. But,
you know, I was like, oh my God, have I missed out on something?
Yeah, there was a guy with little blonde tips in his hair, so I called him Frosty. Now, I didn't call them directly. I just, in my head, I made up these nicknames. And I wouldn't have the best encounters with these folks who were, you know, cruising in a neighborhood like this. There was one guy I'll never forget who told me he was a dancer. And I went into his car and he was telling me, like, you know, I was like 17, 18 years old at this point. And he's like, oh, you're so young and fresh and you've got such beautiful eyes. And then he grabbed my stomach and he squeezed it. And I don't know if you know the Pillsbury Doughboy commercials, but he squeezed and went, he goes, what happened here? Which are three words a gay guy never wants to get asked. What happened here? So that kind of traumatized me from walking around the neighborhood anymore. I just thought, oh my God, I guess I got to go into this bookstore for the real encounters because this is grossing me out. So I finally got the nerve to go in and I immediately retreated to one of the booths in the back because I didn't want to be seen, but I knew that there was like action going on back there. And so I would meet people, and again, I would just trust them and go to their places. I wouldn't have sex in the back. I just thought that was not something for me.
Oh, but isn't it just more convenient to do it there?
I guess I was looking for more than convenience. I was more of a romantic than I thought.
Interesting.
And I would encounter people that I knew every now and then. And one of them was a classmate of mine who just went, what are you doing here? And because he didn't know I was gay. And I just went, same thing you're doing here. And we never talked about it again. And so this area was just teeming with this. And, you know, eventually there were sting operations. The cops would come and pose as civilians and would arrest people for public sex and things like that, or soliciting sex. Yeah, it was rough. I mean, I parked my moped on the side street so no one would see me chaining it up on Melrose Avenue. So I went to like a darker place and I found a place to chain it up. And then I just observed for a while, making sure, like, who's going into the store? Who's, you know, who are these people? Do I know any of them? So I'd watch for a couple of hours. You know, I would be there, like, really late.
Wow.
On a Saturday. You know, I'd get there, like, at 10 o'clock, and I'd be there till, like, 3, 4 in the morning sometimes. Because it was fascinating as well, just watching this, you know, pre-internet, pre-apps, pre-AIDS culture.
Yeah.
That was thriving and cruising. You know, this cruising does not exist like this anymore. And it was fascinating to me. And so I just did a lot of observing. And when I finally mustered up the courage to walk into that store, I did it one slow section at a time each visit. So I walked in and there were a bunch of magazine racks. So I just stand there and look at the magazines forever. Next visit, I'd go look at the porno videotapes of all the 1980s shaved bodies and, you know, ridiculous tans.
And like coconut oil, right? Like really shiny.
Lots of coconut oil. Yeah. Then I'd look at the magazines later. Then the booths that I would go into, I'd make my way to them. The one area that I always got freaked out about was the counter at the cashier. I just did not want to interact with anybody. But I was going in there and freeloading off of them every weekend. They had to have noticed. And so I eventually would like buy some stupid thing. You know, I'd buy a magazine or I'd buy like some type of nondescript sex toy that you couldn't even tell was a sex toy.
Oh, like what?
Well, there were things where if you didn't know that they were sex toys, like Benoit balls, you might just think I bought a bunch of marbles that were silver. So yeah, it was scary.
Do you remember, like, how many visits before you plucked up the courage to go into the back room?
Well, I think I went in the first time I went in, actually.
Oh, okay.
And then I figured the lay of the land and figured, oh, I'm going to run into someone that way. Let me next time pull it back. So I think I went into the back room the first visit.
Ah, well, that's interesting because you this is me making lots of assumptions, so correct me if I'm wrong, but you were kind of going there to have sex. And if the back room was too crazy on that first visit, what was the compulsion to go back?
Well, first of all, I could hide in a booth. Uh-huh. And then I could kind of look out onto the main floor and see who's there. So it was a good spot for that. And, you know, silly me, I thought I'd meet somebody that would want to go on a date. You know, that just didn't happen. This is where you went if you were closeted and you want to hook up.
Yeah. And can we talk a bit about that? Because you have talked already in the conversation about how you were romantic, how you were looking for that kind of connection.
Yeah.
And I suppose like the age thing is an element of this because you were not old enough to get into bars. But why did you think that going to this space in particular was somewhere where you could meet people?
Well, it was also part of the culture. This wasn't a culture of romanticism. There were no legalized gay marriage. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot out there that you could find to live up to. Mm-hmm. And so the culture was very sex-based and the talk was very sex-based and everyone sexualized each other. And that seemed to be the extent of it from what I had experienced. I was too afraid to go into the gay bars at this point because I thought I'd run into people I knew. And this seemed to be a place that might be safer. You know, I didn't have anything to compare it to know that this wasn't a romantic zone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they existed at the time. It's just, I was not evolved enough to seek that out or feel comfortable enough to seek it out.
So I'm just thinking about my own experiences here. And again, it might not be your experience. Do correct me if I'm wrong, or if it doesn't chime with your experience rather. I think for me, when I was younger, rushing into sex was kind of a way of trying to establish closeness quickly.
Yeah, and I would take it further in my head than it was in actuality.
Yeah.
I would think I'm forming this amazing bond with somebody when they just wanted to get off.
Yeah, yeah, and they'll say anything in the moment.
Of course.
Because they're hot and ready and they don't want to scupper anything from happening. Yeah, I think that happened to me a lot as well. And I was just so ready to believe. So talk me through your approach to cruising. Like, what do you do? Are you the aggressor or are you the opposite of aggressor? What's the opposite of aggressor? Are you the
passive
person? Yeah.
Yeah, I was more passive because I didn't have the car. Uh-huh. So I would be the one walking around. Guys driving around might stop and roll their window down and invite me in. So I had to be the one they came to. You know, I couldn't just jump in front of their cars, or I could have, but that would have been silly. So, yeah, I took a much more passive approach because that was safer as well for in my head. You know, I'm not the one who's taking a chance and might run into someone I knew, for example. Yeah. I could check out, look in the car, see if it was someone I knew or not, and then if I was attracted and felt safe.
But it was a snap decision. It was like, I've got to get in this car.
Oh, yeah.
So if I come along, let's imagine I'm driving my car and I've pulled up next to you. I've rolled my window down and I'm like, hey, want to get in? What's your decision-making process?
Well, I would have a conversation for, you know, a long 2 minutes.
Oh, so you'd know my whole backstory by then, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we'd always start with how's your night? And, you know, they'd ask me how my night is. I'm like, what am I supposed to tell you? I'm enjoying leaning up against a cum-soaked wall with people jacking off in an alley. Like, that's in my head, but I'm just like, oh, yeah, it's a hot and horny night tonight. You know, like some stupid porno talk like that, which I learned to get to quickly. You know, hoping against hope that they'd say, you know, would you like to grab a nice meal first?
Aww.
Can we talk about this over some, you know, chicken medallions? But no.
Oh, romance.
Didn't happen that way. Yeah. I don't think I was made for the cruising era.
Okay, so you've had this conversation and then you've made the decision to get in the car.
Yeah.
Are you then, like, how often do you have sex right then and there? And how often do you go to the person's house or somewhere else?
Well, at first I would ask them to pull over. I wouldn't want them to drive somewhere right away. Uh-huh. Say, hey, pull over, let's have a chat. And so we would, and I would just kind of figure out a little bit about them, see if they're making eye contact, see if they feel genuine. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they'd either want to just jerk off in the car or go back to their place. Mm-hmm. It was usually one or the other.
Oh, okay. But like the only sexual act, if you were doing it right then and there, was jerking off.
Make it out, jerk it off. Oh, yeah, okay. Those two. Now, I did have an incident that's really kind of apropos of all this. That there were two incidents, encounters with guys that kind of lit a fire under me in a way. One was this guy who was walking around and he came up to me and he told me that he was bisexual and that he gets the best of both worlds. He's like, you know, women are fun and all that, but you can't get a guy pregnant. In fact, you can only get crabs from a guy. Now, think about this. This is like 1980. And I'm thinking, I'm not too sure if he's right. And, you know, little ping in my head should have been, there's something horrible coming into this culture soon. But, you know, how would I know? You know, certainly, that was the dawning of the AIDS era. And here he was talking about the benefits of, you know, being with guys because you can only get crabs. So that stuck with me for obvious reasons, you know, as life progressed. And then the other one was, you know, there was a bus bench nearby. And sometimes I'd just be tired of walking around and I'd sit on the bench at a bus stop. And this guy came up to me in sweatpants and he had a Chinese takeout container. And he's like, hey, have you been? Like, as if I knew him. And then he would say, so are we still on that agreed amount? And I go, what amount? And he's like, you know, what we discussed. And I'm like, I never met you before. Come on. You know, we talked about a price. Oh. And so I pulled out my quarters that I had in a pocket. And he's like, oh, you really are waiting for the bus, aren't you? And I realized he was an undercover cop trying to, you know, bust me for being a prostitute.
Oh, wow.
And so that kind of lit a fire under me that I've got to stop doing this. I should not be hanging around here. This is not working for me. I'm not getting dates, you know. So it was like, that's kind of the era ending portion of the story of when I kind of stopped going there. I finally mustered up the courage to go into bars and meet people that way. And then also I was in film school and half the students were gay and we would go out, even though they didn't know my sexual orientation at the time, we'd go to gay bars and we'd go dancing and we'd hang out. And so I got more and more comfortable as time went on. But what happened to that area is, you know, eventually there were a lot of neighbors complaining about people having sex on their lawns and there were cops that would, you know, ticket people or arrest people. And so they started putting up signs that said no turns 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. all through the neighborhood to keep people from driving in circles all night. And so that kind of ended that whole cruising era. And then the bookstore closed. And strangely enough, those signs are still there. Now, those signs went up like in the early 90s and they've been there for 22 plus years and counting. Those signs are there, but cruising died, you know, with apps and with COVID and with everything else. People do not cruise around bookstores in the same way that they did back then. It still happens here and there in parks and places like that, but not to the extent that it was. This was insane back then, whereas it's gone, but the signs remain as a little relic of that time. So every time I drive by them, it just makes me think about that era.
And like, how common is having a sign that says no turns?
Totally uncommon.
Okay.
There are two areas in LA, that area, and then an area nearby called Vaseline Alley, which is around another bookstore called Circus of Books. And it's off Santa Monica Boulevard. Same thing. There used to be signs around that area as well, because Vaseline Alley is where people hooked up. Those signs are gone, but the Drake's signs in the Drake's area are still there.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I asked that is because if I was driving around and I saw a sign that said no turns, I wouldn't really understand what it meant.
Right. Back then you would have, because you would have seen the cruising that was happening and realized why they went up. Now you just, I mean, maybe they're still up because just to keep people from taking side streets to get somewhere late at night and waking the neighbors. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just part of that now. But it's a funny story about this whole no turns thing and the whole cruising. Are you familiar with the actress named Debbie Mazar?
Is she an old white lady?
I don't know about old. I don't define old, but So Debbie Mazar is strikingly beautiful. She's got Siberian husky blue eyes.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking her up. Yeah.
Thick Brooklyn accent. Well, I met her because we worked together on a movie called Little Man Tate that Jodie Foster directed.
Oh,
and
yes.
She and I became friends and discovered later that we were neighbors. And so she lived, I think, four blocks from me. And she lived in the Vaseline Alley area at the time. So I asked her one time, what's it like with all the guys that cruise around here? She goes, oh God, she goes, people are sucking each other off on my front lawn. They're jacking off. They're having sex. Some of them are fucking on my front lawn. And so every now and then I'd have to come out late at night and say, excuse me, fellas, I've got my daughter in here. And she goes, little did they know that my daughter was my poodle Dolores, but it got them away. And then I have an ex who also still lives in that area, the Vaseline Alley area. And he got tired of guys hopping his backyard fence to have sex in his backyard at night. And so he rigged his tree that people would climb over with bricks so that the bricks could possibly fall on them while they're jumping into his yard. And I said, you can't do that. If a brick hits someone in the head, they could die and you would be charged with manslaughter. And so I think he eventually got motion sensor lights to scare them away. I go, that's much safer. But people would go to drastic measures to try to deter this, is the point of this, whether you claim you have a daughter or you put up lethal weapons in your trees.
I just can't imagine people being that brazen. Like, I can't imagine you'd be like, oh yeah, this person's backyard, that's a great idea.
Well, whether it's closeted or not, you know, sexual urges are very powerful things for people, and especially if they were closeted or living in an environment of shame, and that they'll get it any way they can.
Sure, but like, if you get caught in someone's back garden by the person whose garden it is, that's a bit more shameful than...
Oh, it's trespassing. It's illegal.
Well, there's that as well. But like, you know, you're being seen doing the sex, like, it's hardly discreet is what I'm trying to say.
No, it would have been discreet had he not put up lights. I mean, it was very dark back there, you know? I mean, probably was as good a place as any in L.A. I mean, it's not like we have rolling hills and grass like we did back in Ohio. It's just, you know, a lot of cement and palm trees.
Well, I still find it difficult to understand people's thought processes in like, oh, yeah, let's go in this person's back garden.
I also think you have to take yourself back to that era. We did not have the conveniences that we have now. You know, now you can use your finger to find somebody on your phone. And then you had to really make an effort. And you weren't given positive images in media or being taught in school what your life could be like, not being given examples of happy lives. You know, you're only seeing gay people, you know, ending up killing themselves or dead in movies or being the butt of jokes. So in that kind of culture, you don't think that you're going to have a happy ending. And so you're just taking chances and getting it how you can.
So in your experiences of walking along those streets and around the block all night when you were a 17-year-old, what do you think cruising taught you about life?
Well, other than the later lesson that I learned that it was a waste of my time, it wasn't serving me well, it taught me that I'm much bolder than I thought I was. That this took a lot of guts and they were not smart decisions. Anything could have happened to me. You know, I could be buried in the mountains somewhere right now for what I was doing. You know, there are serial killers out there, especially in Los Angeles. It's not a safe place. You know, there has been a lot of creepy, crazy stuff happening in this big, giant city. And so it made me feel like maybe I'm stupidly bolder, but I have a lot of guts doing that. That's really the takeaway for me. I can't believe I trusted people and went out there and put myself on the line when I was 17 years old. I was just a baby.
Sometimes you have to be like stupidly bold.
Yeah.
You have to take that leap of faith.
Yeah.
Not that I'm like advocating getting in cars with strangers, but.
No, I mean, I do have regrets of it. I mean, I wish I were bolder 5 years later, that I didn't start when I was 17. I wish I had started when I was 23, because then I would have known that guys wear condoms too, and that there's something out there that you need to avoid. And you know, I didn't know that. We didn't have a name for it. Didn't know it was out there. So yeah, I feel like, God, I was born 5 years too early.
So what are you saying? You're saying that you wish that you had just not explored the sex part of your identity until you were older?
No, I just wish I was born later. I still might have done it at the age of 17, but
okay.
Just 17 in the mid-80s and not in the late 70s. Yeah, I never trust people who say they have no regrets. Like, so you learn nothing in your life? Nothing? Really? You've got to regret something. I regret something on a daily basis. Like, you know, if I lose my temper or swear in front of a baby at a park, you know? And so this is one of those regrets.
Wait, are you swearing at the baby or just in front of the baby?
I'm not going to tell you that.
But I see, I guess this just depends on how you look at regrets, right?
I think that regrets are honest and that, you know, it's okay to have regrets. You learn from them. Well, you can identify areas that you need to learn and grow from.
Yeah, but I think that's why a lot of people say that they don't regret things, because they've taken the opportunity to learn and grow from it.
Yeah, and that's great. That's healthy. But there's still things I wish that I hadn't done. You know, if I could go back, I would have had somebody even told me, like, gay guys should wear condoms. You know, back then it was the only thing you can catch from them is crabs, as that guy said so long ago. You know, I wish that there was recognition and that you were taught these things in sex education in schools. But we've got a world that's so hung up on, you know, what their religious leaders tell them is acceptable in this life because of a book that was given to them and they were indoctrinated. And I don't want to get into a whole anti-religious thing because I think there's good and bad there. But I wish that all of these educational opportunities were available to me, because I absolutely would be telling a different story.
I guess that's, but then you would just be a totally different person.
Yeah, that's exciting, isn't it? Like, I wonder, like a sliding door scenario, I wonder what my life would have been had I done that.
What if you were just a total douchebag, though?
Maybe, but then I could learn and grow from that.
Could you? Do douchebags grow? I don't know.
Sure, I know some douchebags who became good people.
Do you have any memories of Drake's or clubbing from your own queer scene that you want to share? Well, if you do, I would love to hear from you. Go to lostspacespodcast.com and find the section Share a Lost Space and tell me all about what it is you got up to. You can also reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Lost Spaces Pod. Find out more about Glenn by following him on Instagram, Gleborama, GLEBBORAMA, or on Twitter at Glenn Gaylord, and that's two N's in Glenn, okay? If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you subscribed, left a review on your podcast platform, or just told someone who you think might be interested in giving it a little listen too. I am Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.